everyone, and welcome to the Las Musas podcast. My name is Alexandra Cotona, and I'm the author of Dinner on Domingos, also illustrated by Claudia Navarro, and it is coming out October 11th, 2021, and it's published by Barefoot Books. Today, I'm joined by Marcia Argueta Mickelson, author of Where I Belong, which released September 7th, 2021, and is published by Lerner Books. Today in this episode of Debut Diaries, the YA and picture book edition, we're going to be talking about brainstorming, revisions, and the final product. Marcia, can you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your book?
Yes. Hi. Thanks for joining me with this. So I am a young adult author. My book is called Where I Belong. And I was born in Guatemala and came over when I was 7 months old. My parents brought me as an infant to the United States. I grew up mostly in New Jersey, went to college in Utah, and now I live in San Antonio, Texas. I'm a fourth grade teacher, and I'm super excited about this book that's just barely come out. And what about you, Alex?
Well, thanks. I am from Southern California. I have a husband, an eight-year-old, and two dogs. And my book, Dinner on Domingos, is coming out this fall. And it's about just a very personal story for me about going to my abuelita's, my grandmother's house for dinner on domingos every Sunday. And just like the multi-generational chaos that would happen when we all got together and enjoyed a meal. I'm interested in your book for a lot of reasons, because I feel like our books are both very personal, and we definitely kind of wrote something very close to our heart. So what really inspired you to, I know you've written some other books before, but what inspired you to really like do a deep dive into your personal life and write the story?
Yeah, so this book really is very personal to me. That Milagros Vargas is my main character. She goes by Millie, and she also was born in Guatemala, and her parents brought her over as an infant. She has three younger siblings who were all born in the United States. And so she kind of feels like she doesn't quite belong because they all, you know, were born here, automatic citizens. And I have one older sister who was born in the US, and it's kind of an interesting story because my parents came to the United States as young adults and got married here, had my older sister. And then my mom was very homesick and wanted to go back home and see her mom. And she was pregnant with me at the time. And so I was born in Guatemala. And then around 7 months, my dad convinced her to move back to the United States and kind of settle there. And so I always had this thing because my two closest cousins and my sister were all born in the United States. And I was the only one that was born in Guatemala. So I always kind of felt like I didn't quite belong. The United States was the only country I really ever known. This is where I grew up. I've only had been to Guatemala for short periods of time. And so that's kind of similar to Millie's circumstances. I received my citizenship when I was 14, and that's similar to she received her citizenship as well. But I always had the sense when I was that age that there was like a little bit of shame attached to it because my family all came undocumented. And just always a little bit of embarrassment about it. You know, it wasn't anything I wanted to talk about as a teenager. And I think I wanted to kind of tell Millie's story that she felt the same way, that she was a little bit ashamed, even though she didn't do anything. There was still a little bit of shame just because of how, you know, undocumented immigrants are kind of portrayed or talked about or framed a lot of times in the United States. And so that's kind of one that I wanted to kind of put out, a character that had those feelings and how she kind of comes to terms with them and gets to the point where, you know, you're proud of where you came from and how you got here, even though, you know, it might be looked down by other people. And so she's kind of thrown into the spotlight because her mother works for a man who's running for Senate in Texas. And he's pushing some immigrant-friendly legislation in his campaign speech. And so he's talking about Millie and her family in a very positive sense, that, you know, what they endured to get to the United States. And even though they were undocumented, they're working hard and trying to make a good life. And so he's saying it in a positive light, but he kind of throws her out into the spotlight because a lot of people didn't know that about her. And so she's put in this position where now people are talking about her because some people, you know, are wanting to push her to kind of have a voice and maybe tell her story to inspire others, while other people that have a negative opinion about immigrants are kind of trolling her on the internet. So she has like people kind of pushing her in different directions, and she really doesn't want anyone to know her story.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, you don't always want to be forced to tell your story, right? It's your voice, right? You want to tell it when you're ready. So so as Millie struggles, especially with internet trolls, how does the, I guess we don't want to give away too much, but did your story always, did your story always turn out kind of in your head? Did you know you were going to kind of move forward with maybe the senator kind of exposing her, or did it kind of shape over time with revisions?
That was the story from the beginning, that he was going to immediately put her kind of in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. And so from the beginning, that was the story. Now at the beginning, her story is more like a national story, but then like with three revisions and working with my editor, we decided it was more like a story for Texas and not necessarily like for the whole US. Gotcha. So we kind of like focused it more just on the happenings in Texas.
Okay.
So what about your book? Tell me what you said it was about going to your grandmother's on Sunday, and how did that inspire you to tell this story?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, again, mine was shaped for my own personal childhood experiences. I probably connect with a lot of people in the sense that Sundays are, you know, a special time for family. And so every domingo, every Sunday, we would head to my abuelita's to have dinner. And it would be, you know, my primos and primas and my tios and tias, you know, my cousins and my aunts and uncles and the dogs and the abuelos, and everyone would come together. And it was just, you know, multi-generational chaos in the most beautiful way. And I really wanted the readers to feel that with me, hoping that, you know, even though I'm Ecuadorian, hoping that people could connect on, you know, a multitude of levels. The story also has the young Latinx girl who is trying to connect with her abuelita, but doesn't speak Spanish. And that really hit home for me because I struggled learning Spanish growing up. And it was always really important for me, especially as I got older, to learn Spanish so that I could have a much stronger connection with my abuelita. And this story really just captures, you know, the multitude of feelings of kind of not feeling super smart by not knowing the other language, and then also just how hard it is and struggling. It really changed a lot over time for me. I originally, my story structure really started off as more like a dialogue driven story where, you know, the young girl and the abuelita were sitting making locro, this Andean potato soup. But honestly, it was kind of boring, and I really wanted more movement. I wanted more imagery. I wanted more kid perspective. So I ended up shifting it into really taking the reader through the house, through each room, which really each room holds special memories for me, you know, whether it's the basement or the kitchen or the dining room. And so I really wanted there to be more movement and imagery.
That's neat. I really love how you portray, you know, a character who's wanting to connect with her grandmother and not able to because of the language or having a hard time doing that. And I can understand that too, because my parents speak mostly Spanish, but my kids, you know, English is definitely their stronger language. And sometimes they have that trouble kind of connecting as well. So it's something that I think a lot of kids can connect to.
Yeah, hopefully. Do you speak Spanish to your kids?
I did more when they were little, and I just didn't keep up with it the way I should have. And it was just easier. Yeah. And so my oldest does pretty well, and he tries to speak to my parents in Spanish, but the younger two just haven't really shown an interest or really tried very hard. So
gotcha.
It's hard.
It is hard. I knew that I wouldn't be a very good teacher for my son. So we have a really great immersion school actually right down the street, a public school. And it was a pretty pretty easy decision for us. So my son actually goes to a full Spanish immersion school. I mean, is like fully literate already in third grade. So it was, it, I mean, the opportunity was there and it seemed like a decision that, you know, was good for our family. Obviously it doesn't work for everybody. But anyway, I digress because, so in your book, Millie, she obviously speaks both languages and she kind of is bridging this weird gap between being born in a different country. So she's technically undocumented, but her siblings aren't, correct?
She does go through the process in the, not in the book, but prior to the book of obtaining her citizenship.
Oh, okay. So that's not part of the book.
Right, right. This is kind of after, after she has her citizenship.
And then, so as the story evolves, did you find it hard to write a story that was like so personal and close to your heart, or did you feel like it made it easier?
I think it was hard in the sense that you're putting everything out on the page for everyone to see, you know, of a lot of the feelings I had at that age about feeling different and feeling like I don't belong and wishing, you know, that I was more American or wishing that I was born here. And so, you know, I am opening up my heart for everyone. These are the feelings that I had. So that was difficult, but I think it was easy in the fact that I was able to connect with Millie. And I feel like her feelings were very authentic because they're, you know, similar to what I went through as well.
Mm-hmm. So looking at your final product, does it look like how you imagined it would turn out, or did it just kind of veer in a different direction that, you know, a beautiful direction, but just different than you imagined?
Well, I think for the most part, it was what I imagined, but I started writing this story when my youngest son was in first grade and he's now in 11th grade.
Oh my goodness. What a journey.
Yeah. So when I submitted it to my editor, she had some things that she wanted to make it more relevant to the day, and so she had me like rethink some things to try to make it a little more relevant because I had written it, you know, so many years ago, and there was so much that was happening with immigration at the time, with like the child separation policy and just like having you know, a administration that wasn't very fond of or friendly toward immigrants, especially undocumented immigrants. So she kind of wanted me to include some of that. So I did a lot of, you know, thinking about how I wanted to include the story to make it more relevant to the day. And so I did include like the child separation policy and how that affected people and how the national dialogue was, you know, affected by that. And so that is kind of included in the story of Millie. She goes to the border with some reporters and legislators to kind of, you know, protest what's going on at the border. And then we kind of see as things change, you know, that's included in the story as well. So those were some things that, that kind of changed, but the whole of the story is still the same. It's just those little details kind of added to make it more current.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. There was a lot of chaos. Obviously, I mean, still is, but a lot of chaos a few years ago. So I can see that being really important to make sure it's current. And I mean, what a process. I mean, we're talking a decade, right?
And then you said your book kind of changed over time, that you wanted to include a little of some changes into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tough thing about writing in general, right, is there's so many different ways to tell your story. And with picture books, we're so limited on words that it's really, really hard to narrow down the best structure. And so for me, I was going through a lot of revisions on, you know, does this dialogue driven book work or this structure work? And it just, honestly, it wasn't working for a while because it was personal, yes, but, you know, there was always a component, like it was a little too adult and I didn't have enough, you know, kid perspective or children's perspective, or it was too dry, you know, it was just hard to kind of narrow down, what would keep, like every page you have to ask yourself, like there's only 32 pages, right? So why does the reader want to turn the page again? So, you know, working on some kind of repetitive structure to me was always kind of enticing. I loved what Fry Bread did. I didn't obviously want to copy anything. And then I realized I really wanted to move through the different rooms of the house. So, you know, the structure kind of turned into, you know, this living room is for, and then this dining room is for, and then adding kind of all those memories within those rooms. And it ended up working. I had originally done the DV pit on Twitter, and I connected with an editor, Lisa from Barefoot Books, who liked my story, and I had submitted one of my earlier drafts, and it didn't quite resonate with her. She liked it, but there was a couple of pieces she didn't love. And oddly enough, I was working on a revision that included a lot of the suggestions she had in mind. So when I had sent her the second draft I had already been working on, she liked it. And so, I mean, at this point, that was probably my, you know, 26th draft. But, you know, it just kind of what happens, you know, when you're a writer, the story just kind of goes. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I was happy to connect with her through, of all things, a Twitter pitch event. And thankful for it. And looking at like our process and querying, obviously your book, we're talking many years. So what did the query process look like for you?
Well, I started querying agents that seemed like they were interested in those kinds of stories. And I, you know, queried for a long time. I probably sent over 100 queries out, and I had several agents who, you know, would ask for a partial or a full. And I just had, you know, several say, you know, I just couldn't connect with the character, or I didn't fall in love with it. So it was just years of still like querying it. And I had a couple of agents that, you know, gave me really great suggestions that helped me to kind of fix a few things to try again with a new crop of agents. And I went through, you know, I did a lot of the Twitter pitch things, and I also did the pitch wars and everything I could think of, you know, to try to get people interested. And I had a few really nice mentors on pitch wars. It never got picked up, but they, you know, sent me like a letter telling me a couple of things that they liked about it, and just kind of a lot of encouragement. And, you know, that helped, because I felt like, okay, people are interested, and I think I just need to keep trying with it. And so I just kept querying, and then I sent it to my agent. It was just a query letter, and she said, you know, send the manuscript. So I sent it to her, and then I think she read it in like one day and wanted to call me the next day to talk about it. So that was really exciting, because once I sent it to her, it just happened really fast.
Yeah. And so we're talking, what's the timeline here? So you started when your son's in first grade. What year was that?
So that was like, 2012, I guess, 2010.
Mm-hmm. You've been crying for at least 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, and it took me several years to write it. Took me at least 2-3 years just to write it. And then sent it to some, you know, better readers, and did revising and editing. And then, so I probably queried for about 4 years after that.
Wow. Well, amazing persistence. So glad you did. We're all better off that this story's out in this world.
Well, thank you. And what was querying like for you? Just with the Twitter is what
kind of. Yeah, I had I had queried the story to a few other agents, and I had gotten similar feedback, which was, they thought the story was very, you know, nicely told, but they didn't quite connect, didn't think it had enough perspective from a child, not like fun enough. And so I heard that a few times, and that's why I was already revising it. So it just kind of worked out, I guess, in the end, because I had split up with my agent probably about 6 months prior to selling this. And so beforehand, I was writing a whole series of nonfiction biographies that apparently in 2018 was very hot. Got really close to selling it, but didn't. And ended up just amicably parting ways with my agent because I think she was looking for more nonfiction and I didn't just want to do nonfiction. So I also had a lot more work to do as a writer, to be honest. So I split up with her and then just started focusing on the craft and you know, getting in on parties and getting more critiques and all that stuff. But I know you have published other books before. Can you want to briefly talk about those?
Yeah, so I started writing when my kids were very little. I took a break from work and I stayed at home with them for about 7 years and was just looking for something creative to do. I was doing a lot of reading. I was reading a lot of women's inspirational fiction. And so I thought, oh, I could write this. So I started writing women's inspirational fiction and I have three novels that were published with Cedar Fort. They're a small publisher in Utah. And then from there, I started just really getting into young adult fiction. That's all I wanted to read anymore. And I had no more interest in women's inspirational fiction. So then my next story that also came out with Cedar Fort was a young adult. And then from there, that's all I want to read or write anymore. It's just young adult. And that's kind of where my heart is now.
All right. Slightly off topic, but not entirely. What's been your favorite young adult story you've read so far this year?
So far this year, I've really liked, I just read Laika and Zia Camp's Somewhere Between Bitter and Sweet.
Okay.
It's really good.
Very nice.
Kind of been my favorite. And that takes place in Texas as well. So it's kind of, you know, neat to have like those Texas books with Latina characters.
Very nice. Yeah. What's your personal favorite part of the story?
One of the things I love the most is, so my story takes place in Corpus Christi, Texas, which is a city that's, I guess it's a beach city. It's down by the bay in South Texas. And that's where I lived for 12 years when I was writing the story. And Millie just is fascinated with the beach and marine life. And she wants to go to college to study marine biology. And there are a couple of scenes that just kind of really tell a lot about her personally, that it's kind of nice to like explore her as a person outside of, you know, this phenomena that's kind of following her around. She goes to the Texas State Aquarium. She takes her siblings there. And I've been there several times. And just the way that she talks about how inspiring it is for her to go there and to be there. And it's pretty, it's a pretty pricey aquarium, but she goes on a dollar day and she drags her siblings every year on this dollar day because it's the only time they could really afford to go. Mm-hmm. And as she's walking through the exhibit, she's just kind of talking about how inspiring it is for her and how she just wants to study different species of animals in the ocean, and she's very excited to she's going to Stanford and she wants to like explore the Pacific Ocean. And I just love being able to talk about her as a person outside of like the situation of her story, just kind of tell a little bit more about her. So that was one of my favorite parts to work on. What about you? Do you have a favorite part of your story?
My story is obviously a lot shorter. So I do feel like there is a moment. Claudia Navarro illustrated it, and she is just lovely. And her illustrations are so beautiful and dynamic that there's a lot of pages I love. But she captured the young girl and the abuelita dancing in one of the scenes towards the end. And I really like that moment because the little girl says, lo siento, and you don't really know if she's kind of saying it, like saying I'm sorry because she's stepping on her abuelita's feet while she's dancing, or if she's saying sorry for not being able to speak better Spanish. So, yeah, I like that. I like that part.
I like that. That sounds really neat. Good, nice. Something to leave the reader thinking more deeply about.
Yeah, exactly. What are you writing? What are you working on right now?
I am working on a manuscript that I started years ago, and it started off as a women's fiction. So I'm completely transforming the story, and I'm turning it. It was written as a women's fiction, past tense, third person, and now it's going to be young adult, first person, present tense, because I just feel like that present tense. Yeah. So it's a lot of revising, but it's a story about a young woman who's mother passes away, and she's kind of left to take care of her father, who's not taking it well, and she kind of has to help him through the process and help her little brother through the process of grieving their mother and kind of like moving on with their lives. And this story has really, really changed a lot from what it was first started as. So I'm just kind of trying to navigate those changes. It's a lot of rewriting right now.
Yeah. Do you write at night? I mean, you're a fourth grade teacher, so where do you find the time?
Mostly like on weekends or breaks, like summer breaks or spring break, Thanksgiving. I don't really have like a rigid writing schedule because I bring so much work home from the classroom. So usually just weekends or breaks. And that's why it takes me so long to write a book.
That makes sense. I mean, yeah. Time is limited.
Mm-hmm. And what are you working on right now?
So I was writing a lot of nonfiction. Then I was writing this story, and I've actually really been really enjoying informational fiction, where I'm blending a lot of fact with silly fiction. And I'm working on a story about carbon dioxide, which sounds kind of boring, but I'm pretty excited about it. And I don't think it's very boring. It's an informational fiction book. It's about 600 words. And then working on just a couple of other ones, mostly related to, you know, a science or animal based. I am an environmental studies major, so just getting back to things that really excite me in its nature and the environment. So just working on some stories that hopefully get kids excited about learning and don't even know they are. So
I think that's great, because I know my students, they love to read books about like animals, and they do like nonfiction, but I think that they love that idea of like the silliness or like something that draws them in other than just like the information. So
yeah
that exactly. Sounds great.
Well, thanks. It's been fun. I mean, I definitely get into a weird, silly, you know, spot in my brain, and then you just kind of go with it. And then you're like, is this funny to anybody else? So I'm not sure yet.
I'm sure they'll probably find it funny.
Well, thanks. We'll find out, but definitely pretty different than my current one. So I don't really have, I don't have a genre, I realize. I like to write all sorts of stuff. So maybe one day I'll settle in, but right now it's been kind of fun exploring.
I think that's good. And I change genres, and you know, you never know like what other thing's going to excite you.
This is true.
Yeah.
So as you're probably going to get a lot more people reading Where I Belong this year, what do you want the readers to take away from the story, or what do you hope they take away from the story?
Well, I hope that readers who really maybe don't understand, like through no fault of their own, really understand like the plight of immigrants and why people would leave their country and everything they know and come to another country undocumented. I feel like people don't really understand like what a difficult decision it is, and just understand it. I've had a lot of people that don't understand why people don't come the right way, or, you know, get in line.
Yeah, I hear that a lot here. I'm in Southern California, so I do hear that a lot.
Yeah. And here in Texas, I've had this conversation with so many people, and I feel like once they kind of put a face on it and they understand like where you're coming from, and you just kind of have that talk with them, I feel like they kind of, you know, when they put a face on it and understand a little bit, they understand, hopefully, just when they see your story, they understand in a larger context of it. And I've really tried to explain to a lot of people specifically what happened in Guatemala, because it has a long history of what happened. And I think a lot of people don't understand all of the U.S. intervention that happened in Guatemala and other countries that made this made living conditions there very difficult and unfavorable. And it was like, if you had just not gone into Guatemala, like they would, I would probably still be there. A lot of people would probably be there if the U.S. hadn't intervened in all these different things. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. Yeah, just to understand like one person's story and how it isn't as cut and dry as get in line. There's so much more to that. And then also, you know, maybe for readers that have had a similar journey, maybe for them to kind of feel a sense of pride. And then there's also a part in the story where someone tells Millie, a journalist that's interviewing her, tells her, you know, you, for her to kind of understand her mother's perspective of all the sacrifices she went through, you know, and what all she did for her kids. And I think, you know, young undocumented maybe don't understand it that much from their parents' perspective. And I think if anyone's kind of going through similar circumstances as Millie, you know, maybe they can kind of have like greater understanding and appreciation for themselves and for their family.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I do feel like books do and can build empathy and understand perspective and gain and, you know, being able to gain perspective. And you're totally right. I mean, putting a face on these types of issues, I think is incredibly important for people to say, you know, it's not just something people want to do. People don't want to just uproot and leave everything behind, you know, for the heck of it. So I'm proud of you and your story.
Oh, thank you. And what do you hope that readers take away from your story?
Things are changing, you know, technology, we move fast a lot. And I think, or I hope people read the story and I hope it reinforces the beauty in sitting down together for a meal, you know, turning off phones and connecting and having those moments. You know, they meant the world to me and I didn't realize how special they were till I grew up. And I hope that we can all remember, you know, before our kids are older, how important it is to just connect and have those moments, whether it be at breakfast or dinner or whatever time you can make during the week. It's really important. And that's why I love cooking, because I do strongly feel like it brings people together. And I also feel like if you're struggling learning a language, that's normal. It's really, really hard to learn a language. And so if kids are out there saying like, yeah, I have first generation or whatever, and I don't speak the same language as my grandparents, you know, that's okay. And if you want it to change, you can.
Sounds like a great story. And I think a lot of kids would connect to it. I'm gonna keep an eye out for it. Next month, right? It comes out next month.
Yeah.
I'd love to buy it and read it to my fourth graders, because I have a lot of kids that I think could really connect to it. I'm a bilingual teacher, and there's so many kids that probably, you know, have certain similar circumstances where some of the kids in my class speak Spanish, but not all of them do. And I think a lot of times there's a lot of Spanish going on around them, and they kind of like, they're like, my grandma speaks Spanish, but my mom doesn't, and things like that. I think in so many ways that my students could definitely connect to that story.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I definitely look forward to reading your story. I have ordered it and it is not here yet, but I'm trying to support all the musas I can. And it's hard. There's a lot of beautiful books.
There are. I was amazed how many came out just recently.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
So is there anything that you're excited about this year coming up, like after your release?
Yeah, I'm super excited for the Latinx Kid Lit Book Festival. I think it's going to be super fun. I mean, the lineup's incredible. I personally am excited to jump in and listen to a bunch of the workshops. I'm also part of a panel about food and familia, which obviously is close to my heart. But I mean, all of them look just really solid. I even told my son's school about it, and trying to tell the world, because I think it's great and it's free. And I'm pretty stoked about it. How about you?
Yeah, I'm excited for it as well. And I also told my the reading specialist at my school, I sent her an email. I said, look at all this wonderful opportunity for educators. You could win a class set of books. And, you know, for my, our, it's an elementary school. So I think like your panel would be perfect for them.
Awesome.
And there's other panels as well that
seem perfect. There's so many good ones.
Yeah, I'm trying to for sure talk that up as well. and I'm excited too. And I'm going to be on a panel about social justice. So I think I'm excited with the people that are going to be on that panel with me.
Yes, I'm definitely listening to that one.
Well, it was so good to talk to you and get to know more about your book, and super excited for it. And it was just lovely to kind of chat.
You too, Marsha. Thank you so much. And I wish you nothing but the best. I know you got a starred review and you're just crushing it. So I wish you just a fantastic fall. And I hope the rest of your writing goes well. And, you know, carving out that time is super important. And I just wish you the best.
Thank you. And the same to you. I look forward to your release date coming up just like less than a month away, right? Or something like that.
Pretty close. Yep.
If you'd like to learn more about Las Musas or our books, please visit our website at lasmusasbooks.com or find us on social media at Las Musas Books, and be sure to check out our bookshop page, where each purchase of one of our books goes towards supporting independent bookstores. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also sign up for Las Musas newsletter to have podcast updates, as well as other Musas news such as release dates, teasers, spotlights, and more delivered straight to your inbox. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much.